Hello and welcome to Imperial College Business School's podcast, Inside Out, with your host Varun Bakshi. Inside Out focuses on ideas, academic work and perspectives within the business school and how all of that relates to the world outside. I'm joined today by Rachel Turner, Head of MBA Careers Provision at the B School, along with Gemma Robertson, who's Director of Employer Relations. I thought of drawing on their wealth of experience to understand a bit more about recruitment, especially in London, as well as what employers are seeking in the job market and how that need can be met by aspiring applicants. Let's listen in. Rachel and Gemma, so nice to have you on the show. I want to begin by talking about recruitment, since there's a wealth of experience that exists between the two of you. How has recruitment changed over the years? What did it look like 5 to 10 years ago, and what does it look like today?
Fantastic. So I'm happy to start, and then Gemma, I can see pass over to you. I suppose something that really strikes me where recruitment used to be is, I think recruitment used to be far more reactive from a recruiter and employer side. It was far more about posting job positions, obviously originally more in paper and adverts, and then obviously that shift to online, but then waiting for respondents and then shortlisting respondents. Whereas now it feels like there's a real shift where recruiters and kind of talent acquisition leads are actually looking and sourcing talent from the general public, from people they know, from people they don't know. So I think that's quite a big change in recruitment over the last 5-10 years.
So I think one of the key changes over the last sort of 5 to 10 years has just been the emergence of and importance of employer branding and the emergence of social channels that have created a lot more content that is available to candidates. It's much more prevalent information available on company culture, insights in terms of the workings of the organisation, spotlights on job careers, job opportunities. And I think that as a result, it kind of just provides a lot more information to support candidates through their application process. I think one of the other key changes that have sort of evolved over the years have been the investment in technology for recruitment functions. So the sort of AI and automation, sort of video interview applications. The importance of diversity inclusion has obviously been hugely important and continues to be so, and will continue to be so. As companies increasingly look to diverse talent pools to ensure that their companies can perform at their best. I think assessing on key values and traits, but not at the purpose of just trying to find the same person, when sometimes that might be referred to around cultural fit. Candidate experience has been key over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, and it just continues to be even more so. And I think that in the current context, actually, networking with individuals and talent has just become much more than just beyond face-to-face, but actually including the online communities and virtual networks.
Great points made. I mean, I want to know as much about my next employer as I possibly can before I jump in. And that access to information is critical in the decision-making process. Gemma, you're coming at the back of heading recruitment for ASOS and are now Director of Employer Relations at the B School. Could you walk us through how firms approach recruitment and how different recruitment looks for an organization that's scaling versus one that's already scaled?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the key things that the talent acquisition will look at is workforce planning and really identifying the future skills needed and the future talent acquisition requirements within the organization. So thinking about what those skill gaps are and potentially difficult to recruit roles and understanding the importance of having diverse talent in the right place at the right time to allow the company to achieve its strategic ambitions. So in terms of what numbers, the continuous need or the specific bespoke or technical requirements that might include. So typically the objective is to sort of look at how we might be able to identify talent to fulfill those needs. And initially, it might be looking at internal talent and creating internal opportunities for development, progression, and mobility. It might be looking toward the external market, which can be a combination of direct or indirect sourcing. So thinking about the career sites, thinking about social platforms like LinkedIn, Glassdoor, Zing, Facebook, sort of the broader networks and college networks to be able to pipeline, especially within cyclical recruitment patterns. looking at referrals and direct headhunting for the passive market, and exploring sort of key agency partnerships that can either help them on a volume basis or a specialist executive search as needed. I think that the building an employer brand, so really thinking around content, events and networking, is really key, and looking at the assessment methodologies in terms of selection processes, onboarding, and really considering the candidate experience. These are the sorts of considerations that a talent acquisition team think about when they're trying to build a pipeline of talent into their organisation. If I understand your question correctly, in terms of understanding the difference between an organisation that maybe is at that startup stage, or just having gone out of that startup and just scaling incredibly fast, potentially sort of the 20-30% beyond per year, versus an organisation that perhaps is a bit more mature, I think it goes to what the workforce plan needs are. So in that sense, is, do you need a lot of people immediately to fill vacancies, or is it that you need a steady feed to replace likely attrition that might happen throughout the year? I think the question on organisations is always around urgency versus the time it takes to obviously hire people into the business. Do you grow internal talent within your organisation, or do you need to buy externally in that concept, the skills within the market to be able to address the skill needs, or potentially you may not even have internal talent to be able to grow at that point, depending on the size of your business. So, or where you are, sorry, in terms of your scaling. I think that it's very fast, typically in scaling organizations, recruitment are fast campaigns. It's very fast moving, evolving roles, and probably more often will be quite externally focused to be able to get the talent in. Whereas potentially, but it's not taking away internal development, but it's just the pace at which an organisation may need to bring talent in that they may not already have within the organisation. I think if it's focused at the volume recruitment, or where even an organisation is scaling in a particular or specialist function, it may actually be that a talent acquisition makes the decision that they would consider outsourcing through an RPO to be able to achieve that if they don't have the internal infrastructure to be able to deliver.
How are cultural fit, soft skills and aptitude factored in, especially in the initial phases of screening? Because recruitment is moving away from just having a particular skill set for a particular role towards individuals who can communicate well, who have the potential to lead, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very much accepted, I think, and agreed that soft skills are as important, if not more in some cases, than technical hard skills alone. And I think that organizations are exploring different ways in which they can assess that in terms of their selection processes, by kind of really considering the key traits within their organization and skills needed to be able to achieve success within an organization. And I think that they're and it goes back to potentially earlier points that have been made, that when companies are advertising opportunities, they really do communicate what the key skills and traits are that they're looking for within an organisation and how that aligns to the values of the company. And then they're looking for candidates to really be able to evidence and demonstrate that in their applications, whether that be through their CVs or online applications, or as companies are moving much more towards different technologies to support them in their processes, that can come through various online testings or assessment centres that might do that through group work.
And I think just to build on that, I completely agree with everything that Gemma shared there. I think from that candidate side, from that student side, it's also a really important part of that decision. The fact that organisations are trying to be that transparent and clear about what the culture is like, what the environment is like, and then making sure that you can demonstrate that. It's also ensuring that it's demonstrating what does genuinely align to you, because something that employers and recruiters can also find a challenge is where people are presenting themselves, but it's not feeling authentic. And there feels like there's this gap, and it can sometimes be quite hard as a recruiter to almost put your finger on what is it that's missing. And sometimes where it is it's where candidates aren't demonstrating their genuine motivations, their genuine personality, that's then being able to show that cultural fit, or they're trying to show themselves on paper as a cultural fit, where it might not be an actual match. So I think that authenticity and being able to almost be really honest with yourself when you're looking at those descriptions from employers and think, actually, is that an environment that aligns to me? Because you want to make sure there's that match, regardless of how it's being assessed and regardless of how you present yourself.
Rachel, this is more geared towards you. How different and difficult is the journey of finding a suitable role for students who are transitioning industries or roles versus students who wish to accelerate their careers through an education?
So I think there are two always really, really different groups of students and groups of job searchers. So I think the challenges they experience are extremely different from one side to another. I would say for people who are looking to accelerate their career, then key areas that they want to be considering before studying, whilst studying, when job searching is, where is it I want to get to? Like, what is the plan for the medium, the long term? What is ideally these career goals that I'm working towards? And then where are those gaps that I need to close with this specific qualification, with this particular learning that I'm gaining? And how do I share that? Because I think knowing that you want to accelerate your career and study is going to help you get there is a really valid point and a really strong idea. But making sure you're then selecting a program that is going to help close particular gaps or help address areas of the industry you're looking to work in and to help give you an edge over other candidates is really vital as well. So making sure that you're looking at closing the right skills and understanding what it is you're looking to get to and what is it that you need to be in that position is probably one of the challenges associated with it. And then I would also say a big thing around that career acceleration, and it does repeat within that career change, but the ability to really, really articulate what it is that this learning has given you and how that would really benefit that employer is absolutely vital. And part of that reason being is because recruiters, as Jem has already mentioned, they are seeing and having access to so many different candidates in the market who have often come from so many different backgrounds. They have lots of different qualifications, experiences, and skills. And because something's there on paper as an academic achievement, that doesn't then necessarily relay to that recruiter what exactly that's going to bring them. So I just think that articulation of what that qualification and learning and teaching will bring a business is really important to then be able to apply for those next steps and take those next steps as well. So that's probably a little bit more around the career acceleration. The challenges and I suppose the difficulties around the career change is far more about trying to know what that change can be. And naturally, I suppose a process that students, that people go through when they're thinking of that career change is at the beginning thinking, I know I want to change, but I have no idea of what that is. And then being able to really take that step back and understanding, right, what are my values? What are my strengths? What am I motivated by? And then learning about industries, about jobs, and often linking it back to your passions and your interests is a really important part of a career change as well, because that's huge within a job. Being motivated, being passionate, it completely changes your work experience and your time in an organization. So I think really always having that whole process of being able to understand what do I want and who am I, and then being able to go through a process of researching that industry, understanding the jobs within it, and networking is just huge with career changes. And we've seen candidates, students be so successful pivoting to completely brand new careers, completely different industries, huge amounts of learning and technical ability they've needed to pick up really quickly. And they've been successful because they've really taken that time to understand the industry, understand the business, understand how they fit, and build the network around it.
Very interesting. We have a few cases of the triple jump, wasn't it? That's a change in industry, a change in role. And what was the third one again?
And a change in location. Yes, exactly. Wow. Right. So that triple jump that people have been successful in to go just within one go. But again, those people that I do know that have been successful in those triple jumps, it's all been around that learning, that articulation and that network that's really enabled that to happen. And if you don't have one of those pieces there, it makes it really, really tricky.
Mm-hmm. Recruitment in the UK is bound to be turned on its head due to two factors, COVID-19 and Brexit. Coupled with the new post-study work visa, PSW for graduates, what is the landscape going to look like in the next 18 to 24 months?
It's a very hard question to answer. I imagine that like the market as a whole, in for more of the immediate time for these next 12 months, say, is going to be, of course, affected. It is going to be some areas of that market is going to drop, and that will include that graduate recruitment as well, potentially. All of that said, that doesn't mean that's across the whole of the market. And I think there will be industries or parts of industries that are going to really grow as a result of this. So areas of tech definitely have already seen growth, but as a result of this, they will continue to see growth. I suppose kind of subsectors within, for example, within finance and fintech and e-payments, again, that growth, that continued growth as well will happen. So I think it's really understanding what the different industries are experiencing and what the effect this has had on them, to then really understand, right, what would the focus be for careers past this as well. There will be parts of industries that even in the next 18 to 24 months will take a long time to recover, the travel, the leisure, the hospitality industry. I think for students, for job searchers in general, it's always about understanding the industries, what the themes are, the trends are there. In terms of, I suppose, a little bit more about the recruitment and how that might change, I think that the remote working shift and the fact that that will change completely is something flexible working has been part of a conversation and something that a lot of organizations have said, oh, we want to do, or we're thinking about doing, or maybe saying it doesn't suit us, it doesn't work for us, that have been forced into now working flexibly and remotely. And actually, that's going to make a massive impact on how the workforce is recruited and how people carry out their responsibilities, their duties in the future.
Regarding the post-study work visa scheme, it's definitely a welcome sort of government proposal that will allow international students to remain in the UK after 2 years following their graduation, which will just, I guess, give a little bit more time for individuals to find and build that experience within the UK market before potentially then going on again to apply for tier two.
There is a tremendous push in recruitment for diversity, the importance of which cannot be stated enough. The school also plays a pivotal role since students today are leaders tomorrow. Can you talk us through the importance of diversity as well as the symbiosis, please?
I completely agree, Varun. EDI is widely accepted and recognised with a number of research publications reinforcing this, McKinsey being one example, that diverse organisations outperform those companies that do not have a diverse workforce. EDI is a fundamental part of good people management. And it's really important that leaders create an open and inclusive culture to gain the best results and attract and retain great talent. But as you say, it's just not companies that have this responsibility, but it's also that of the business schools to sort of reinforce this in their future business leaders. And I think the programmes at the college really bring together top talent with diverse backgrounds and nationalities, really broadening the perspectives and really valuing and respecting the different viewpoints, and in encouraging, therefore, problem-solving and creative thinking. The college absolutely champions greater inclusivity and has a really clear EDI strategy, which is obviously available for everyone to view on the Central Career site, with a clear call to action for all staff and students to ensure that they create an inclusive culture and that dignity and individuality of every person should be respected and cherished.
Yeah, completely agree with everything that kind of Gemma's shared there. It's an area that I'm really, really passionate about. I wrote an article on it about 4 or 5 months ago. I think from the student side as well, something that's great is that the experience that students have on campus allows them to really understand the value of diversity, because a number of students are aware of the fact it's a prominent part of our programs, and they will gain that exposure to more diverse communities, more diverse groups and individuals as part of their experience. But until you arrive either on campus or have those interactions, it's hard to know what that's like. And something that I really notice in conversations with students is how they suddenly realize, actually, I can't believe the amount of brand new ideas that these people have, or the different perspectives that these people bring. And I think ensuring that's really shared when you're having conversations with employers, with networks, like just in general, because it's probably something that is slightly less known sometimes from employers, how strong the diversity is. And I think the fact that people have already experienced that just sets them up so strongly.
Mm-hmm. Great points made. And I completely second what Rachel talks about in terms of how students learn about diversity as well inside the classroom and outside. I want to tie this last point back. I want to tie diversity back to leadership. Is this an ongoing process where there's not just diversity that's recruited from universities, but also people of different ethnicities and backgrounds have leaders that they can look up to, that they can eventually aspire to be in the future? How far do you think we are from a situation such as that, where we don't have to talk about minorities any longer?
I agree, Varun, with your point in terms of it's so important that people working within organisations can see and be inspired by leaders, from a gender perspective or an ethnicity perspective that represents. And I think that in terms of where organisations, they are definitely, as we're seeing, companies understand the importance of this, but there are still a way to go. And I think that it's a really conscious effort that needs to continue to be made by organisations when they're looking at their recruitment and selection and working with their often at senior level roles, executive search agents, to really make sure that they are identifying the best possible and diverse talent pool available to bring into a recruitment process and therefore increase visibility and numbers on board level positions and senior levels across the organisation.
Yeah, and I really agree with Gemma's points there. And it's something that it's fantastic that it is kind of either forefront or really being highlighted across a lot of businesses, a lot of companies. The level of awareness is really growing. I think all of that said, there is probably still that long way to go before we're in that position that you mentioned, Varun, where actually it's not even discussed because it is the norm to have that complete consistent diversity. And I think part of the reason behind that is also not because of a lack of desire to have more diverse leaders, but sometimes it's all of these extremely small changes that are actually extremely embedded in just ways of working, a way that the company has worked for years and years, that it's hard to realise that actually that might be putting groups of people at a disadvantage, and which takes a long time to actually get to that point. You think that's something we need to shift, and it could be something as so small as lots of leaders, when people are in a particular level of seniority, maybe they access a two-day conference, and that's something that's really engaging, a fantastic conference. Now, immediately, that's something that is potentially taking a lot of females who are mothers, actually putting them off taking that step to management, because if they need to take that time away, is that something that's practical for them? So I think there's even just really tiny, tiny things that are embedded just part of a day-to-day style of working or an approach that, again, they're not put in place to stop diversity, but they can put some boundaries, they can end up putting limits on, but they're not even known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great points made. Hopefully the world keeps questioning and heading in that direction. I think the more conversation and dialogue we can have, the more progress that we can make. All right, I want to wrap this up. As tradition, we want to get your one book to read.
Yeah, of course. Well, great question. I'm actually currently reading and really enjoying something that I'd seen on a recommended HR list by Josh Burson, and it's Ride of a Lifetime by Bob Iger. And I'm just really enjoying sort of hearing the insights of a CEO of obviously a very large organization. And I think that it provides just really useful takeaways for considering leadership style, approaches, and workings within an organization context. It really drives home the importance of great people and great talent, and just sort of relationships building. And it's really interesting. I find it interesting because it's a personal journey of someone's career and the experience that they've had. But they do provide throughout just useful insights and kind of thoughts for consideration as individuals are going into leadership roles themselves, and just to always keep championing, really, some of the thinking that's out there. So, you know, I'm finding it a really interesting read at the moment.
I'd say from my side, probably one, if I've got more of a kind of a careers hat on, I would really say Steve Dalton's 2-Hour Job Search is a very kind of structured, pragmatic, kind of logical approach for people that are thinking about that career change, thinking about that next step, and that exploration. So I think that's one that is so relevant, no matter what kind of level of seniority you are.
Excellent. We'll definitely keep these recommendations in mind. Somehow also Disney never gets old, does it? We're all kids at heart. That's a wrap for this episode. I'll see you in the next one.